this great nation of God's kingdom, there can be no question to the Bible student, nor to the student of history, that this is one of the great nations of God's kingdom. A land which in the foreknowledge of God had been promised to us as a race. A people who God had promised to not only bless and guide and protect, but a people that he called to carry out the standards and to lift up the programs of his kingdom on earth as in heaven. Had told them of their responsibilities, had spoken unto us before our entry into this physical world, and then had recorded the things which he had said to bring back to our remembrance by his Spirit. I want you to clearly understand tonight, when we talk about your race, we talk about the Adamic household, we are specifically talking about a race as an ethnic group that relates to you as a people. We're talking about the white race and its special relationship to the purposes of God, and to its origin, and to its destiny, and to the things which have developed. And these purposes, and these plans, and these things which God shall bring to pass, shall be brought to pass because of his ability to stimulate you as a people, and to keep before you a vision, and to challenge you, and to awaken you out of your sleep, lest you surrender to the policies and philosophies of destruction that swept this world in innumerable chaoses before the arrival of your own civilization, society, culture, and race. So we point out to you that if there is anything that is important for you to preserve, it is to preserve this destiny decreed by God to you, and that you should not only preserve this destiny and this inheritance, but you should keep the image of its instruction, and you should not permit this to be mutated nor destroyed. When a people attain something and then permit this to be taken from them, they are making a grave error of mistake, especially when they're being promised the thing which they've already attained. Today, we as a race have watched ourselves arrive from one man's family, the great nations and companies of nations in the world today. The Most High God spoke especially concerning your own nation, and the prophet Isaiah, as well as the prophet Jeremiah, spoke about this. When David stood by the coronation stone of his pillar, God made great promises unto him that a land was going to be given unto this race. Another land, not the one that he stood in, but a land far beyond this one where he now stood, a place where eventually you would dwell, where you would never have to move again. Now the fact remains that there were many covenants made with your race concerning great nations and companies of nations. God spake in Jeremiah concerning this land which you would prepare, especially as this was going to be one of the great nations of his kingdom, fulfilling a great responsibility, a land which would have unusual identification marks. And God spoke about that, a land where the great Lebanon trees would grow, the great mighty Gadgadisha redwoods, a land where the myrtle tree would grow, as it did in Palestine, but not that land, because that was where, at that time, David was standing. It was at this place that Jeremiah was prophesied. It was beyond that, a new land, a great land carved out of the wilderness and prepared for the children of God's kingdom. A land covered with forests, divided by rivers. A land where the fir tree and the box tree would go. A land where there would be ample provision for the supplies of food. And where we would see the great orchards that would be planted and developed, producing the fruit, as well as God's blessing upon the grains and upon the cattle, upon the development of your civilization, upon your metallurgy and your mining, and upon all the things that were related for the building of a great technology. And God said, I've reserved this land for you. Others may dwell upon it, but they shall not exploit it, nor will they understand it. But for you I have preserved this thing. Because you are one of the great nations that were to arise, a nation out of the kingdom of God, which in this great hour of testing time would be very vital for the survival of all the nations of your race and for the structure of God's kingdom. We are told that this land was going to start out in its national identity as a nation whose governors would be of themselves. And therefore their judges would be as aforetime, which was virtually the procedures of your Supreme Court, like the judges of Israel. And by this declaration, God talked about such a great nation. In the book of Isaiah, where it said that under the outstretched wings of the eagle, this great house of God would be established, a powerful nation, tall and clean-shaven, a nation from its very beginning that would be able to handle its enemies, a nation God promised us to bless, a land divided by rivers, a nation who would be measured out underfoot, and you were one of the first nations in the world to be surveyed north, east, south, and west, and in the alignment of your survey to have what was called by your national legislation a Meets and Bonds Act, so that all property was thus surveyed. The fact remains that these were but prophetic destinies of this great nation, a powerful nation under God, who had lifted up the standards of the Most High upon the nations. There is no doubt that in your race there was an ever great desire to attain and to build a perfect society. God Almighty not only had prophesied that His kingdom would rise and grow until it would fill the earth, but it would be a kingdom of special capacity. It was the kingdom of a spiritually possessed people. A people who were spirit of His spirit as well as flesh of His flesh. That as a race they possessed capacities that belonged to no other people on the face of the earth. For they could receive the guidance of the intellect of God. They could receive the communion that came from His spirit as Jesus spoke about in the 14th chapter of John. Even an area of communion the world could not receive. Around about you were races with varying origins. Races created by the Most High, such as the Tungus men or the ancient Asiatics, who migrated across the earth, and the vestiges of their civilization can still be found in the earth, who were brought to catastrophe in the defeat of Lucifer in the heavens when he made earth his dwelling place, and who brought in with him peoples of other species and kinds, such as the Negroids, who make their history with the fall of Lucifer and the ancient patterns of ancient record and text. But you a specific people that were sent in by the grace of God to not only be a race that would transcend all that had gone before it, but because of it, their heavenly origins and their spiritual vision would build a kingdom of civilization to set free the people that were in bondage. That you would conquer darkness, that you would conquer evil, that you would throw down tyranny, that you would lift up great standards and do mighty things. This was ordained. That your fall as a disobedient children to the laws of God would come through the seduction of Eve, through the violation of law, through the plan of Lucifer. This also was prophesied, that the intervention of God stepping in early to cleanse by His own priestly assumption of authority as the Melchizedek kingdom father priest, without father, without mother, without beginning of days or end of life, abiding a priest continually. So that in the fall of Adam, the greatest transgression that could have been imparted to a race, with the loss of immortality, with the things that followed this violation of law. And yet God stepped in and He took care of this situation by making the sacrifice for Himself. Thus the greatest of transgression, bringing the first catastrophe of transgression on your race, the grace of your Father put aside by His own action. Prophesying He fulfilled atonement for your race, identifying Himself with it, saying, "You are my household and my sons and my daughters, and I am your God and I am your Father." Establishing the patterns of His laws with the wisdom of His Spirit, calling for separation and segregation, calling for no intermingling or intermarrying with other races, calling for the rise of standards that were built on divine law. And unto you God made His covenant, and unto your race He gave this law. Out of it would come the law of knowledge and of wisdom and of righteousness and of technology. Laws that govern the proper conduct of man, his relationship to the earth, to its agriculture, to its economy, to its standards of morality. These were the laws of God given to a race called apart that they might bring these things into reality. Now, with each and every one of these patterns of divine law, you were not placed in bondage. You were set free from ignorance and superstition. Understand tonight that the increase of knowledge sets men free, and that the lack of knowledge holds men in bondage to superstition and error. Thus it is we ascribe the necessity of knowledge. We seek after it. We have been assured by our Father, "Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Every secret thing shall be made known to those that have the desire to seek it in the household of God." Of course, we are well aware of the different characterization the various parts of God's kingdom and of its processes, but it is all open unto you. A people's spirit, soul, and body in the image of their Father, even as God was able to move into any plane of His creation. We point out to you that by the same process that God calls upon your race to recognize that it becomes the vehicle and the oracle of His truth, it becomes the keeper of His law. He gave you the law because you had the capacity to receive it and to understand it, to administer to its affairs. The hosts of the earth the veins of Africa, and of the outposts and the remnant islands of civilization plunged beneath the waters of the ocean by the catastrophes brought upon themselves and their violations of principle and law. In this declaration, you couldn't give the law to races already bemused in their minds by Luciferianism, people already worshiping idolatry and worshiping the areas of pagan gods and false superstitions. It could only be given unto a heaven-sent race from spirit to earth, embodied in the very issue that God had brought forth with a destiny decree that they would build such a kingdom, and that such knowledge would bring liberty and freedom. I want you to know that as a race, no other people had the tremendous insight, vision, initiative that you had. From the very beginning of your race, it was an understood principle that men must be free before God. That when such government as they should establish should take place, it would be under the principles and the processes of divine law. That it not only guaranteed the freedom of the individual before God, but such a government developed and built at any of its stages by its people, recognized their right to property and their right to pass it on to their posterity. Recognized that it was not the right of the state to so infringe by confiscating their property that it would take away from them their heritage or their birthright. We note that in the structure of the rise of this race, throughout its history, from its Magi kings to its patriotic and very definite design to form nationhood, from the rise of that nation and its dispersal and its division, we watch the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard, Germanic peoples finding their ways out of the captivities of history and arriving in Europe, where they settled to form this great spreading program of what we today call the Western civilization. We have never lost any sight of any part of the white race. They have not disappeared out of sight. Many people talk about the lost 10 tribes of Israel. Well, the lost 10 tribes of Israel are not lost tribes. They're found people, identified biblically, historically, and by background and by culture. My word shall not depart out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of thy mouth of thy seed's seed for 1,000 generations. You can take some hope in that tonight, because it's only 7,400 years back to Adam. And then if we deal with the house of Abraham to our time, we've got only about 3,500 years of the 30,000 years consumed. So they're not about to wipe us out. They're not about to stifle out our faith. But God help those that try it. Because if there is anything that God has ordained, is that this people shall move through every surge of problem to rise and to rise and to rise again. Because you can't stifle the sons of God. However, we have watched the processes of divine law disobey, and with each area of disobedience comes oppression, comes the law of property, comes the law of freedom, and comes the movement in your peoples and among your nations of people that are lower than you by status and by capacity, ruling over you by cunning and by the agility of Satanism to sell you a bill of goods. We tell you that it would be impossible to enslave your race unless trickery and cunning is involved. Now we tell you, in this day, when you are one of the greatest challenges in your history, if you let trickery or cunning rule over your society, it's your own fault. When we survey what transpired in these migrations, watch this great part of the house of Joseph establish a nation. Watch these colonies filled with white men from every branch of the Western world. Watched as the attempt on the part of the enemies of our race, the sons of Lucifer, the strangers of cunning, seek by oppression and by influence around kings and treasuries to place us in more economic bondage and to extract from us taxation without representation. And suddenly what God had designed exploded with a kindled cry of freedom, and the torch of freedom was raised high in America. And we, the children of the kingdom, we, against even our own kinsmen, declared we will be independent to fulfill our destiny under God. The 4th of July in 1776, we signed the Declaration of Independence, and we became a nation. This may be a good message for this year, because on the 4th of July of 1966, we will find the planets in the sky and the astronomical measure exactly like they were on the 4th of July in 1776. We hope we have just as big an explosion for liberty. We point out to you that these areas of freedom for which we contested and for which we fought a revolution and which became the young lion that spanked the mother and brought into being a new nation under God to fulfill this great purpose of the Most High on this vista of the last day. And in that day, we protected ourselves. We established the right of property. We established the right and of the individual to vote according to the status which by those states and by the requirements of those states and by the approval of those states and federation were thus classified. I'm going to just tell you this, whether you like it or not, or whether anybody in the North or South likes it or not, because, you know, I can care less whether people like it as long as it's true. It was not provided for that a Negro could vote in the United States by our constitutional forebears, by the founders of our country, by the George Washingtons and the Benjamin Franklins and the Thomas Jeffersons, too. About the time somebody goes off to talk about the great father of democracy and they want to tell us all about Thomas Jefferson, I want you to know Thomas Jefferson owned more slaves than them all. And they were better off there than they ever were in Africa, I can assure you that. You know, there are a lot of things that are done by the Democrats. I don't like to call them Democrats today because I don't believe they're Democrats. I don't believe what we have going on in Washington today or what we've had since the days of Roosevelt represents the Democratic Party. I think it represents the capturing by the powers of hell of a great political party in these United States. And all we're asking for in this day is God give us men, strong men, men sun-crowned, men big enough to live above the storm, men big enough to challenge it and take back their party. Because I got a promise for you. They've been giving us away and selling us out and betraying us and planning a dictatorship, and we're going to take it all back. So I said, you don't dare talk like that. Well, I'd like to see them challenge us on taking back our constitutional rights. If they say we can't have our constitutional rights, we can't take it back, they admit it, they've taken it away from us. I point out to you that one of the greatest areas in the history of our nation in the route of the stake was to let them sell us on the fact that this great republic was to become a democracy. Democracies become decadent demonstrations of mass mob rule that end with lost liberty, lost property, with violence, overthrow, and turmoil, and lost liberty. You've got a twisted idea prepared for you by the battle of semantics. That a democracy is freedom. A democracy is mass mob rule. This great country is a republic, that it is to this republic we pledge our allegiance and to no other procedures of government. The only thing we'll trade this republic for is the theocracy of God's kingdom when God Himself takes the throne and we, His sons and daughters, share in that tremendous sovereign kingdom over one end of the earth to the other. I tell you that apart from situations of past history, we are at one of the great terminal turning points of all time in history. I want you to know that to preserve our freedom, we must take an affiant stand upon the structure of government by which and through which we can preserve that freedom. We must demand that our Constitution be upheld, and we must make it stronger, not weaker. We must restore as much liberty to the individual as it is possible for him to administer and then delegate such authority by the Constitution to those few that shall represent him to carry out those functions that he personally is unable to carry out for himself. But if we do not limit federal power, we do not limit the power of dictatorship and the power of executives and the power of courts gone mad, then this freedom and this liberty will be swept away, and soon we also shall be but the peasants of a tyrannical dictatorship. And I'd just as soon fight here to keep that from coming to pass as to see my sons and my grandsons fighting anywhere in the world to preserve the status of liberty. I think it's most significant that when we divided up the areas of our legislature, so that those that constituted our House of Representatives were elected by the people according to their numbers and in their districts. We had provided for representation of the people by their selected representatives, and then to protect the provinces of our nation, whether they be large or small, by their territory. The senators were elected by the legislatures of the state, elected by the people to go there and select their representatives for them. And therefore the state elected the senators, and the people elected the representatives. No state, big or small, need to worry that its representation would be curtailed by the masses. God help America if the mob masses of New York City and the city of Los Angeles or these areas where deterioration and mob violence takes place, where unassimilatable minorities move in. God help America if they can determine the destiny with more strength and more senators and more power. What we have witnessed is already an attempt to gerrymander our legislatures in our local states, which is to be followed up by a gerrymandering in Washington. It was back in 1913 that the great catastrophe first enveloped our nation. And instead of sending our senators to Washington from our states, elected by the legislatures of those states, they got this crazy democracy idea and said, you got to elect the senators just like the representatives by the people in those districts. Now you are still being represented now by the mass decisions of the people. Now they have reached the point where they are preparing a design in which, therefore, they wish to eventually have all elected representatives elected by the direct vote of the people. But strictly, this design, again, is a part of an attempt to break up what they call the Republican principle and put in the policy of democracy. One man, one vote. You say, well, that's a great principle. They want everybody to vote. They want them to vote whether they're literate or illiterate, whether they can read or write, whether they're but the tools of the demagogues, whether they belong to the subhuman society or whether they belong to the superior intellect. You know what is essential to the preservation of freedom and liberty? It's not now a law of the land, but it should be, and it should be. No one should vote in anything that affects any tax status in our nation or the election of anybody that can influence it that's not a property owner. So why is that? Because this is where the levies finally find their resting place, and people then would have initiative to become property owners, and when they became property owners, they take a vital interest in the preservation of their freedoms and their liberties. Because when they take away your property, they take away your liberty, and you become a slave. To preserve our liberty. So they gerrymandered around the position of our legislatures to rob the influence and the power of our states and to pass it back into the areas where they thought they could more completely influence this decision. And so our senators were elected by the peoples within the state. But still, the areas were not determined by the size of the state, and therefore we had certain areas of security. The design today to so change the status of our entire legislature is one of the policies which is ahead. When they wanted to destroy us, Satan designed his own politics. When I say Satan designed his own politics, I want you to understand tonight that socialism and the communist states and their societies, or the politics of hell, designed by Jews, financed by Jews, and put over in the world by Jews to destroy Christian nations. When Das Kapital was written by Karl Marx, he also wrote several other volumes, and in them were contained the outline for the conquest of all non-socialist states. The procedures by which communism was to rise and socialism was to come in was ordained by certain political statuses of operation. Thus it is that I call this to your attention. These basic principles, and I can show them to you in Das Kapital, I can show them to you in the other writings of communist leaders of the state. First, the order to put over the socialist system, which promised great utopian advantages, such as the redistribution of all the wealth in the world, the leveling of all standards of economy, the sharing of the most valuable production of all time with everybody. This was the lying promise of the devil. But remember, the devil's a liar. I want you to understand this tonight, and I don't care whether you understand it from the past or not. I'm just going to tell you, don't you ever believe or trust anything that any Jew can cop. Now, I don't tell you that a Jew never tells the truth. They do if it's to their advantage sometimes. But I'm going to tell you, never trust one because they're all liars. Every once in a while you find a liar, and the moment you find you have one of these unmitigated liars, well, then you're faced with something. You can never trust them again. You can't have any confidence in them. The best thing is to put them on the outside. But when you're dealing with one who is of the house of the strangers, who hates your God and hates your faith and is a political destructor working for Lucifer to take over the world, the best thing you can do is get them out of your country, and the faster you get them out, the better. And if we could get across tonight what we know about this thing to the peoples of this nation, they seize and seize and seize, and God knows how they do it. But something in my Bible tells me they don't go. Now, of course, one of the first principles of the communist world state that promises you so much is to abolish private property. Now, someone said, what is private property? It's not only the property that your house is on, it's your dwelling. It eventually becomes everything you own, even to every personal effect. An eventual totalitarianism can take anything away from you and not permit you to use anything except you please the state. But the abolition of private property and the ability to do this through federal power or world governmental powers is the first step in the overthrow of a free society and the conquering of a people. So abolition to private property and the excuses by which it's nationalized, confiscated, condemned, or seized is one of the beginning first steps. Now, this is out of Karl Marx's own position of the seven steps for the taking over of a country. The second thing that must be abolished is the abolition of inheritance, because it relates to private property, or the ability of families as units to form an area of wealth and pass it on for the fiscal security of their society or their family. So to inherit, or the ability to give to somebody that which you have produced or pass it down at your death, must be abolished. And to abolish this becomes step number two of the 7 points of the communist program. Karl Marx said that the confiscation of the property of immigrants and rebels, so that anybody forced by their situations to move into any country of the socialist state that loses all of its property, and anybody that opposes or stands in opposition or is critical of the state is to have his property confiscated by the very processes set up. Note how always, first and foremost, the attack upon a people to take them over and make them a socialist state relates to their property. Now we go a little farther. The sale and ownership, state ownership of transportation and communication, is absolutely essential to the creation of the socialist state. The moment that you get ownership of transportation and federal ownership of communications and control over it, you can cut off the areas of people to communicate or to travel from one part of the country to the other without permission. You are moving into a position where you can hold the people in bondage. Now, number five, individual income tax. The income tax is one of the chief weapons of the socialist state. And I point out to you that practically no one in America paid any of it except a few of the very wealthy, and it was very small before the end of World War II. You were paying such a little bit when they instituted areas of it in World War II that it hardly took anything out of the pocket of anybody. But by the periods of 5 and 10 years after World War II until now, it has become confiscatory to the point where almost 30% of all the production of your nation is confiscated through income tax. This enriches and empowers the state to use this money
to fight your welfare and to take you over.
Oh, you say, well, we're living in a welfare state. I'm going to assure you that no part of the program of the welfare state is for the welfare of the people.
It's to reduce them to the status of being controlled.
He said, well, Mr. Johnson makes a big speech. His mind is just filled with how can we help everybody. If Mr. Johnson believes this, he's just a tool whose mind has been captured by an ordained, well-organized socialist revolution that's already made progress here.
But I'm not going to give him that much trust. I think that this individual is well on the road by his own understanding, guided by those around the back that are helping to utilize his ambitions to the creation of a national dictatorship.
Now, number six, to transfer the instruments of production to the hands of the state, including sources of fuels and powers of resources and raw materials, and thus to control all industry, all production, and all the original sources of necessity. Understand this? To gain control over resources, to gain control over all the instruments of production, to gain areas of administration and power to affect everything that people have need of in order to live. That's a part of the design of the socialist state. And then the seventh, to produce the area of compulsory education of children in public schools directed and controlled by the state. Now, this is not the local province. This is the federal government. Now, each and every one of these things which we have been advocating opposition to, and each one of these principles of the Marxist program outlined as the way to rise up and overthrow the bourgeoisie and to destroy the structure of the capitalist state is the principle employed today from the New Deal to the Great Society. All that's being taken in order to give you more. And it's not intending to give you more. It's intending to rule you from the cradle to the grave. And the only excuse for it is designed for power over people. And it is the program of the Antichrist to weaken the kingdom, to make it possible to take over your nation. Oh, I think we've got a lot of dupes in here that think that they're securing an area in the machine of some great new experiment in society. They've been fed a bill of goods. They go down the line with it. They're told that this is intellectual and they're antisocial if they don't go along with it. And the planners that use them are planning on reducing your nation to an inability to separate itself from their master design of world control and world power. When I talk about men like Justice Douglas and Justice Black and men like the great traitor in my mind, Mr. Warren, and those that stand with him, their design is putting you into a world government, and they're drawing up its constitution, and the program is that of a world court in which they can make decisions to be superimposed over your constitution, over your rights, and over the decrees of your nation. They're doing this because they are attempting to build the order that takes away your freedom. They tell you that men don't know enough to be free. They tell you that it takes, because of the technology of our day and the tremendous knowledge we've discovered, it takes a lot more control than we've ever had before. And that you and I as individuals cannot control this. It must be controlled by superminds and by master brains. And I want you to know that if we took out of the United States everything that was non-white and non-Christian, we'd have more brains then in function than we've ever had before, and we'd have more rascals who are the parasites that feed on you and enslave you out than you've ever had before.
There is no question about the design. I want to point something to your attention. The Chicago Tribune printed a editorial, which I have a copy of here. And this copy of this editorial was the 27th of January of this year. They said that Mr. Johnson's plan for utopia should be carefully evaluated by our citizens. The end of all local governments in the United States is at hand if Congress approves President Johnson's vast new program to rebuild and reorganize all American cities, and to propose to make over every local community according to the standards laid down in Washington by his elite truck. And now in the area of control of all urban development and all procedures of its governing,
A cabinet post relating to housing and urban development has been created, and a Negro weaver is upon this area of authority. For the area of this development, as it relates to the destruction or the confiscation or the seizure of properties or the securing of them, for the urban redevelopment and the development of its housing and the assignment of that housing, another Negro, and that, my friends, is Wilkins' brother that has been put into this area of authority. So now we have our cities under the plan of a socialist society, the president's asking power to go ahead on this full blast, and before he gets the assignment of all this power, he's already set up a cabinet post and put up another nigger in charge of the control of the housing and the dispersal of peoples in it. I want to tell you tonight that if the president got his way, if he has his way, they can come in and confiscate your home and drive you out. They can affix the price you're going to get for it. They can become punitive to you because you oppose socialism and communism. Or they can razz the whole neighborhood, and they can then take your confiscated properties and monies and build housing and assign you in it if they so desire. Or they can pack it with Negroes or moving Asiatics or anything unassimilatable, and they can force you to send your children to their schools and through their mongrelized program. It's laid down. You know, the one way to be free is for a people to wake up and say, this is our nation. And if they want to talk democracy, then let's remember that 149 to 151 million people in these United States are white. Let's stir them on this basis, if necessary, or we take back America. If they want the procedures of the Constitution and the Republic, then there isn't any way for the great majority to lose if you fulfill your responsibility in regaining control of your beloved country. And I'll tell you how you'll do that. You're going to bear witness to truth, and you're going to stir everybody till he sees like a pot boiling on the stove. That's what the book of Zechariah says about these last days. And my people are going to boil, and they're going to seize like water boiling in the pot, because they're going to find out behind every one of these situations is a Canaanite. Used to say every time you turn over a stone, you find a sow bug. Well, every time, my friends, you get down lower than a snake's belly, you find one of the Canaanites. And I point out to you that if you can stimulate in America a spiritual awakening to say these people must go, and then vote it out by your numbers that you've won. So I said, what do you think if we can't vote it out by our numbers? You can vote it out by your numbers unless there's a fraud in the voting. And when you've got a wave of reaction sweeping America, which is your responsibility, and you haven't voted it out, then it's time to stand and call for a new Paul Revere and hunt up a George Washington and go to Washington. So I said, when are we going to do that? Well, we're going to talk to our representatives, of course. The representatives are going to hear the people, but they won't hear them again. No doubt of it. One legislator told Washington to Mr. Johnson this week, you better listen to the voice of an angry people. You've got a revolution on your hands. George Washington said, don't ever let this nation cease to be a revolution when that revolution is for freedom and for property rights and for upholding the Constitution and that flag. We have too many revolutions running around free tonight. They're trying to overthrow the government, trying to take the flag and put it up a dirty old spider web in its place. The time has come when Americans should haul down every United Nations flag, spit on it, grind it under their heel, and call for the stars and stripes alone to fly in your country. To take away the independence of this nation was never provided for by our Constitution or by the procedures of our legislative procedures. No man was ever sent to Washington to sell out America or to give it away. Someone said we have no right to take a position like this. Let me tell you why we have a right. This is a Christian nation. They're trying to take it away from us. They're trying to roll us into paganism. They're trying to put us into a program of a confederacy with evil. Every Christian minister should be standing up challenging this and trying to set his people and all he can influence on fire for God.
I'm not unaware of the time it is. I know we're living in the day of the Antichrist.
They talked to me about it when I was a little boy. I heard it in evangelistic sermons when I was growing up as a lad. I heard it from my own father's mouth in the pulpit and from other expositors in the scriptures they passed. I heard it in colleges and in Bible schools. The day would come when Antichrist would come, all the way out there somewhere in the future. But as I learned the times and the measures and knew what time it was, I knew that there were many Antichrists already in the world, and it was already far too late that we should be recognizing this and dedicating ourselves to fight the Antichrist.
I have watched weak deed and cowardly people say we dare not denounce these things. If we do, why, we may be persecuted, or we may find that there is enough power already of evil that's taken over the state that they'll move after it. And then I remember the words of the scripture, the Antichrist would rise. Then what's the responsibility of the Christian? What's the responsibility of the pulpit? To acquiesce to the evil, to acquiesce to the Antichrist, or to speak out, let come what may, and then trust that there's power enough in the host of God and an awakened people to protect those voices in that day. I know not how some men may live. But I can tell you, as long as such evil threatens the nation of God's kingdom, my race, and my faith, I would find it intolerable to live without speaking out against it. I would find that it would be gnawing at my heart and gnawing at my soul. I'd rather live free 1 year denouncing evil than live with security unknown and let it go by unchallenged. Never has there been a time quite like this one, to stir the hearts of men. We are not alone in these problems. The program of Antichrist wants to take away the freedom of men under the leadership where it properly belongs. It wants to take away the leadership of great free governments like Rhodesia. Now, we can't help the fact that there are far more morons and far more sub-societies and pagan peoples on the earth than there are our race. We'll increase this race as fast as possible. We'll extend the areas of authority fast as possible. The world advances under the civilization of the Christian and under the leadership of the white man and under the law enforced by his armies and his police. But I tell you tonight, my heart is warmed by the resistance of Jan Smith down in Rhodesia, or by the declarations of white men God raised up for their hour. The refuse in South Africa or any other place where white men are challenged to surrender their liberties. And I pray for the judgments of God and the curses of judgment to fall on those that would take away white civilization and white leadership and the kingdom of God, which God placed on high. I have little respect for patriots that want to attack what they call the white supremacists, while at the same time they attack the enemy and find the middle of the road. There's no middle of the road, black, brown, or some mangy color of mongrelization that you can turn to. Either your race must ride high, free, and supreme, and especially supreme in these United States where you're the majority, or else, my friends, you betray your faith, your family, and your God. Now, if this disturbs you, be disturbed. I read these words. The Chicago Tribune has more courage than many pulpits and far more courage than most senators. It was great in the days when McCormick was in charge of the paper. It still carries on areas of greatness. And I know some of its battling editors who have taken a great stand. Men like Walter Trohan, who have been one of the greatest voices in journalism in the entire history of the United States. Listen then. The local government of the United States, the end of it is at hand. Your communities, your city levels, why to make ready for the dictatorship. The president's vast new program to rebuild and reorganize all your cities in areas of cities and their satellites as government stronger, more powerful than county or state or local government, all under a federalism and under an internationalism. How is it? The president unveils his plan. A year ago, he asked Congress to expand the old programs for urban development. He introduced several new ideas and rent subsidies, satellite towns outside of cities, various grants contingent upon area-wide planning. He asked for the creation of a cabinet office of urban affairs. Congress reluctantly gave him the new cabinet office. That's where we now have the Weaver man. They called it the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Harry Byrd warned that the new department would cost $225 billion in the next 13 years. He probably was not far off, because the president's latest message to Congress calls for spending on an unprecedented scale to revamp the face of America through this urban city control. The Communist Party and the conspiracies of these institutions of communist democracy, in which men like Justice Douglas have so much influence, have already planned and set up an organization to create and train city managers under the communist socialist system. And the city manager organization is tied into a plan for this great urban city central control, a program of the Antichrist, has already been organized under United Nations institutions. Under the proposed developing world government, which is also to be a United Nations or world government instrument. At the present time, all free cities that have a city manager under this free city system are members of a world communist conspiracy. The city of Glendale is one of these, and so also is the city of Palmdale, that didn't know even what it was getting into. It was only a short time ago that Mr. Tito came over here and visited the United States and visited the city of Glendale. Did you know that? Most people didn't know it. He was the guest. He was flown in. He was flown out. Why? Because the manager of all cities of the urban program for the World City Provincial Area, the total administrator of this under United Nations, is Marshal Tito, the communist. Marshal Tito has authority over Glendale, and he has authority over Palmdale. I just point out two of these areas. There's many more of these cities, and they think they're real smart. They get a city manager from the World City Manager Distribution Service, trained and picked to become a lackey for this area of eventual suppression of the rights and the privileges of people. Eventually, under this design, the revamping of these cities. Why, one thing, you know, the enemies of freedom and the enemies of private enterprise and private property want to destroy cities like Glendale. You know, they never sold the property to Negroes. No Negroes in there. You know, down here in Watts, one of the things they wanted to do as soon as they broke out of there was to burn Glendale to the ground. These committees heard the complaints of Negroes and said they wouldn't sell us property, and we're either going to have property in there, we're going to mongrelize that town, or we're going to burn it to the ground. And what did they advise? They advised the city leaders to find some way to gain the sale of property. Well, Mr. Tito may snap his fingers, city managers may hope, but the people have decided so far to not sell their property to the Negroes. The only reason why I point out this area as it relates to this vast urbanized idea. Super cities built of steel and concrete, filled with parks and with areas of synthetic community beauty built in. They may have their color, they may have their symmetry, as you look at the great weaving bands of freeways and of tubes and of new designs for transportation and motor rails and helicopter services and complete entertainment and mass education. Because it calls for the educational system to be directed in these cities by a program meeting the requirements of the federal government, and classifies that these areas, in order to develop them, must be developed by federal government, and then when they are developed by federal government, the federal government can direct its program and its curriculum. I point out to you that anything the federal government can subsidize under the creation of patterns of misinterpreted law, it can control. So the moment you say, well, get something from the government, we get it free, you'll lose your freedom and you become its slave. The authority of government is derived from the governed. This is true in a great republic. And therefore, under our Constitution, we delegated the areas of authority and power. And as we delegated these areas of authority and power, we restricted it with other branches of government. Our enemy was not uncunning.
He moved in and slithered in like the snake, like the parasitical vine, and he attacked all these branches at once. So he so degenerated the areas of the court, the areas of the executive body, that one was not much of a balance against the other, and now he has gained control and turned to make politicians out of statesmen. Until today, you don't have too much legislative protection. Having destroyed the working policies of these branches of our government, there are no checks and balances. The safety resides only in the power of the people.
Let's go back to the piece in the Chicago Tribune. Federal taxes now meet 2/3 of the cost of urban renewal programs under which the land is acquired. It's cleared, it's developed for private and public uses. It's confiscated or condemned, and federal aid takes on two forms: a complete array of available grants and urban aids in the field of housing, renewal, transportation, education, welfare, economic opportunity, and related programs. 80% of this is to be supposedly non-federal costs of the demonstration program, but the plan for the satellite towns is back again. And thus it reaches out from this city over whole counties, which are then taken in. And so a new subsidy scheme developed. It has been modified in some form by Congress in the last year, but it's taking millions of dollars to get it rolling. And the President has asked and is renewing a proposal made in his State of the Union address for legislation to bar racial discrimination and sale or rental of housing. Says the Chicago Tribune, presumably this would include private housing and sales, as well as those as federal agencies and the guarantees of a loan. To carry out such a plan, the Constitution would have to be warped, and it would have to replace every housing transaction and put it under interstate commerce and control it by government. So when you have lost this control over property and private property, you've lost your freedom and the inability to preserve a culture that God told you to come out from among and be separate to preserve. If President Johnson's goal in what he calls better housing for all people is desirable, and if it is granted that the cities face these immense problems and successful planning and financing must come from Washington, and contrary to the worst problems of cities, the results of federal interference have already shown us this, that Washington is under the direction of a city planning program, and the mistakes made there are obvious. Inevitable initiative disappears. No freedom by experiment. Inevitably, the cost becomes astronomical because the taxpayers must turn over the money for the federal grant. And the money that they get wasn't free money. It was confiscated from them and badly spent. What, my friends, do we get out of these controlled cities? We get crime and violence. Until it's no longer in these cities where they have freed the masses from responsibility, safe to walk on the streets at night, Washington, D.C. being an example. It's not only not safe to walk on the streets, but in our time, the deterioration that threatens your life and your security is a byproduct of this turning from law and from this turning of the responsibilities of racial self-respect and demand for obedience to law, which comes out of your society, and turning it over to a full freedom of expression, even though that expression be that of the cannibal or the savage. So, three cheers for the Chicago Tribune. If there's anybody left in Congress who dares to say it, Lyndon Johnson is taking us from a republic to a totalitarian society dictatorship. That isn't a week old, a month old yet, my friend. That's that editorial out of that great newspaper. Within the status of this design, I tell you that never have we had more evidence of the completion of this Marxist policy. There are many things that we would like to discuss, and some of them we shall. As you turn into the Scriptures, we have been told, as a people, return ye backsliding children, and I'll heal your backsliding. Behold, we come unto thee, for thou art Yahweh, now our God. You say, what do you mean, backsliding people? Because under divine direction, under the patterns of law and instruction, you become a grand republic. You have liberty. You have freedom. You have more than any people ever had on the face of the earth before. And then you get lax, and you turn from the laws of God, let the strangers come in, and you let them break down your immigration bars. And then with this fusion of unassimilatable masses, and this liberation that took place of peoples that were of sub-social levels,
And then the intervention by the money changer and the internationalist to try to mongrelize your society with the mass increase of these freed slaves. Instead of operating a program for transplanting them back where they came from, they're designed to plant them in your homes and end your race. I have minutes and material from various United Nations organizations and democratic institution planning programs that call for the ending of race to identity by the mitigation and the mongrelization of your entire race. The plan right now is under the design of these city-state provinces is to bring into these great new city-states people from all over the world which will be brought in by the request of the city and located in those cities to mix the status of those cities apart from all immigration procedures. Some of these designs, like Dade County, Florida, is an actual area that is separated from the control of the Congress of these United States to enact laws or to use federal judges to enforce it, except where they appeal for it. Already set free under an internationalism. This is a part of the program of the Antichrist. This is a part of the strategies of evil. The Most High God then tells us, listen, my children, he says, I'll heal your backslidings as you come unto me, but truly, in vain is salvation, hope from the hills or from the multitude of nations, but it must come from Yahweh our God. He's the salvation of our people. We must return unto his laws and his ways and correct the areas and fill up the gaps. You know what filling up the gaps is? It's stopping this flood that comes in. It's going to the dike. It's not putting your thumb in it. It's putting the masonry back with tempered with the Spirit of God. It's to determine they shall not flood our nation from the outside, and they shall not overthrow the majority of the peoples of this nation from the inside. Now the scripture says, because you permitted these strangers to come in, shame hath devoured the labor of our fathers from our youth. Their flocks, their herds, now they would take their sons and their daughters. Your wealth is being confiscated. The income tax of Karl Marx has been developed in America, and it comes now even a graduating scale, and it confiscates your wealth. It's a part of the design. They say, well, we're going to spend $104 billion over here for a foreign aid program. We're going to spend another $50 million over here. We're going to spend $100 million over here. You don't have any representation. You don't have anything to say about it. Even your representatives don't represent you. Whenever they get up and say, we're going to give away $104 billion. Takes 1,000 million to make a billion. Just remember that. It takes 1,000 million to make a billion. And there's only 200 million people in the whole United States. So what they are going to spend is over each and every one of you this year to just give it away. They're going to spend $500 worth of the money representing every baby and every adult in the United States to just give it to people all over so they won't have poverty. The state of California, we're already broke because the parasites ran away with the gold and silver, as we said, and they locked it up in Tel Aviv. They clowned you. They took your representatives that became their tools, and they confiscated your gold and your silver. Oh, you say they did it with acts of Congress? They did it by perfidy, by violation of the principles supplied by our constitutional conventions for the control of our economy by the representatives of the people. But Mr. Brown said, we've got to have more money. But of course, he said, I don't want to raise the taxes. He said, I'm not going to have any new taxes. I have a great idea. We're not going to have any new taxes. All we're going to do is abolish the exemption. Why, that's just this week. So you see, that's not very far away. Used to be $1,500 an adult for his wife and $600 for his children. We're going to abolish the exemption. We're just going to give them $15 deduction for each adult, $6 for each child, no other exemptions. We're not going to raise any new taxes. We're just going to take the exemption off and just collect the taxes. You know, this is the way Democrats talk nowadays. You know? What kind of a lying operation is this? If there's any opposition to this policy in Sacramento, it's because there's some people that are afraid they're not going to go back there next year if they double cross.
confiscate property. The design in education is so reached the point that by the utilization of new instruments under the government, such as mental health programs, that they want to have a IBM card on every student and on reports concerning the attitudes of his parents, and then eventually separate the children from the parents who are anti-social policies, do not support the program of this great world social welfare state. Before a family should permit that to happen, they should have Bunker Hill at the front door. Yes, my friends, to preserve our freedom, the thing that we must do is to not only familiarize ourselves with the strategies. Don't just take one little passing look at the paper and say, oh, they're talking about money today up there. They're talking about public education. Oh, up in Congress today, they're talking about some program under the city development plan. They're voting on that. Make it your business, because there are two things you've got to do. You've got to raise a cry against it. You've got to tell it. You've got to get everybody talking about it so America is rippling like a wheat field. And then you've got to so charge it with fire that it burns. Oh, like a field under the wind. I'm going to tell you first, you build up the voice of the people. Even as Thomas Jefferson, John Adams did it with letters, you must do it with testimony, with word of mouth. You must denounce the evil. You must point out its evil, its strategy, the program of Antichrist. You must make a nation. The majority must speak. The minority's voices are heard all over. They march. They protest. It's about time the kingdom of God came alive. And then, my friends, you must, as a people, be determined that you shall be heard, you shall make the Constitution work, or you shall send men to Washington and see they get there that will fulfill their obligations under that Constitution. If all else fails, law enforcement breaks down, then you, the people, must reinstitute government, even by your force of arms, by your blood. But when you reach that point, you have only one thing to do. You have taken a stand for truth. You have hurled back into the face of evil the challenge of liberty. And God said, I'll send you in hosts and I'll back your play. You know what I think? There's too many people afraid to see whether God tells the truth. If God hadn't made covenants and hadn't told the truth, my people would have been devoured a long time, is all he said. When he tells you over here in Isaiah that the strangers have devoured your land. And he said, not only this, but they devour it in your presence. They make it desolate. They're overthrowing it by strangers. It's about time for you to see that the strangers go packing. God says, we'll put the vine tree back in the fire. Yes, and in this they have become your shame. Instead of my prophets denouncing evil, they say, we just go along with it to show that we're good fellows. Let everybody express themselves. Only thing is, it seems like the enemy is doing most of the expression because he, by his control over money, has captured communications, and federal interference in the areas of communications gives him a free channel and takes it away from you. Oh, our shame, it says. They've devoured the labor of our fathers. Why, family savings have been swept away. Their manipulation in the areas of economy have captured our fortunes. They have come in with federal decree and told the farmer you can't plant because you'll raise too much wheat. Then say we have a food shortage, we have to produce it. They have killed the cattle and then they've taxed you to buy it on the outside and paid higher prices than they give you for it, and then they have given it away to foreign countries. This week we are giving millions of dollars worth of wheat to India. I utterly oppose giving 1 pound of wheat to India. Someone said, why? I'll tell you why. Because it's a pagan idolatry. It's a pagan idol-worshipping country. Even when President Eisenhower went over there, they put a caste mark on his forehead and took him into pagan temples, and he let them do that. We should have impeached him the very moment he let that idol mark be put on his forehead. He said he did it out of respect for their old culture and their ancient ways. I don't have any respect for any pagan culture or their ancient ways. Someone said, these people will starve without food. All right, let them get into those great coffers of emeralds and diamonds
and of jewels that are held today by their pagan temples, and are held today by the powers inside their governments that confiscated this from the people. If they want wheat, sell it to them. We'll put their diamonds and their jewels, their gold, their silver, and our treasury. Then keep every cotton picking hand and finger of every Jew off of it. Someone said we can't eat it. Well, if it isn't valuable, what are they hanging on to it for?
You know, these people that borrow our stuff,
that will pay you after they eat it up, they don't have anything and they don't want to pay for it. You know, the hardest thing in the world to collect is a food bill because they eat it up. It's like a dead horse.
Someone said, well, they want those gold and silver and jewels. All right, if they want them, let them produce something for it.
But if they want this, then let it go to our treasury. We can get some real money back in circulation again.
And if the ends of the world want to come and buy, let them buy. But don't you subsidize one nation that wools its hour with the Antichrist, that belongs to the Confederacy of the Soviet Union or to the Red Chinese. The president says we may be called upon to feed the world. And you know what the program they're following? I've given everything to everybody under the social welfare state. We'll have everybody quitting work. Everybody sitting down in the new city. Nobody growing anything.
There won't be enough food to feed us if they don't stop this silly program.
This, my friends, is the lie of the Antichrist. To be free, you must teach your children the laws of God, the advantages of God's way, that it promises by these endeavors prosperity to your fields and prosperity to your race, that you'll have homes and property, that you'll have estates and you'll have inheritance. And if you fulfill the laws of God, you're soon to see no loss of inheritance, immortality upon your society. So instead, we don't want that. There wouldn't be room enough on the face of the earth. Let me tell you something. There's going to be a lot more room than you think, because there's a lot of people not going to be around here. And then these sons and daughters of God, when they've finished 1,000 years of development, and they can come and go anyhow all over the universe. It's a big universe. We're not worried about room. But for a people that stand like sons of God, daughters of God, tall, they must be free. We tell you, anything that destroys our freedom, confiscates our property, denies us the right to protect ourselves, forces the absorption upon us of races that we are told not to mingle with, or takes over the teaching of our children, is a violation of God's law, and therefore you are duty-bound to oppose it. You don't have any alternative. A good Christian stands for freedom, would lay his life down if necessary to preserve it, would destroy those that threaten it, and would praise God and pass the ammunition. Now let me get this across to you tonight. They're planning right now, in the name of the guise of a post-attack program, to set up centers of central government in underground communication centers that can cut off all power, control all communications, and direct it with a national policing operation. And they're going to put it in not after attack, but before attack, not to be used after attack, but they only call it post-attack. And the attack they're more worried about comes from the voices of people that stand in opposition to this dictatorship. Remember, the president wants the federal integrated policing program in which the police integrate all police, control all highways, carry out a project that has takes care of all areas of transportation, and reduces you to a protective war to the state, but one that must obey and must do what he's told. The kingdom of God operates by showing the values of initiative and vision and creative ability. It says you are masters of the area I have given you. You can create, you can build, and I'll bless your hands, and I'll bless your increase, and I'll bless the thing you attempt to do. We gain unlimited tomatoes, anything we desire. Yes, our homes are filled with appliances, and they're held with the things we have placed there for our ease or for our amusement.
Our carriages are better than most in the world. Everything that we have is better because we made it. Because God gave us the inspiration to make it. And the world that touches our civilization is better because they can gain and they can have from that which we have produced as we teach them how to work and how to produce.
But don't let them take it from you, and don't let them tell you they gave you anything. The government gives you nothing. You hire it to do its work, then limit its power, lest it becomes your master and takes over your life. Under this challenge to the ends of the earth, the white men everywhere, make sure the government becomes not your master, for you are to rule and reign with your Father in the great kingdom of God. And you're to be free men, and you're to live free until the kingdom comes, and then he that's set free by Christ is free indeed. Ye shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free. We can't finish this subject. We see that tonight. We're going to speak next Sunday night on the mark of the beast. We're going to pin it down and show you some things you need to know. We're speaking next Sunday on the mark of the beast. Its rising challenge, its insidious hand reaches out across the world. The kingdom shall survive because the sons of God will chop off the hand of the beast and the head of the beast and the arms of the beast, the tentacles of the beast, because God's ordained it. But today we stand under the threat, the mark of the beast. We'll be speaking Wednesday night, Lancaster, in our Bible class, answering questions, going into the deep truths of the Scripture. Next Sunday afternoon, don't miss this subject, the indestructible church. I want you to understand this and draw faith out of its promises. Our subject next Sunday afternoon is the indestructible church. Next Sunday evening, the mark of the beast.